Just in case you missed it, last Friday was World Turtle Day. I don't believe it, you missed it. Well, maybe turtles aren't high on our agenda here in Mortlake, although personally I love photographing them and snorkeling with them. But the thing about turtles, or at least sea turtles, is that although they spend most of their lives in the water, they lay their eggs on land, on the beach or in sand dunes. And when they hatch, the baby turtles have an inbuilt instinct, a sort of inner sat-nav, which draws them towards the sea. It's as if, without anyone telling them, they know that that's where they belong. As if they hear the sea calling them, and they know that that's the only place where they will survive. Why on earth am I talking about turtles? Well, in the reading that Paul read to us from Acts 17, St. Paul says that human beings are also created with a sort of inbuilt sat-nav. Not to head to the sea, although I love the sea, and actually I feel very close to God when I'm in the sea, but to search for God, to head for him, the source and sustainer of our life. As our reading puts it, from one ancestor God made all the nations to inhabit the whole earth, so that they would search for God, perhaps grope for him, and find him. We are created, says St. Paul, with an inbuilt desire to find God, to be in relationship with God, to hear him calling us. Somehow, without being told, we know that that is how we will really thrive. And just as turtles hatch within the sight and smell of the sea, so for us, says St. Paul, God is not remote or difficult to find. He's not far from each one of us. If we search for him, then like those turtles following the scent and sound of the ocean, we will find him. In fact, rather than God being somewhere out there, we'll find that instead we're swimming in that great unending ocean, which is the love of God. But let's step back a moment to put that reading from Acts in context. St. Paul has been journeying around Asia Minor, telling the story of Jesus and his resurrection. And the message hasn't always gone down all that well. In fact, Paul ends up in Athens because he's trying to steer clear of people from Thessalonica who've been trying to get him clapped up in prison. And Paul, being Paul, isn't one to miss an opportunity. After all, the Christian message turned his life upside down, almost literally, and he's passionate to share it. And before our reading starts, you could have read about him speaking with anyone and everyone in Athens who would listen. And now he's been invited to address a meeting of the Areopagus, the governing council, the movers and the shakers. A bit like perhaps being asked to address the Lord Mayor's banquet in London or some other gathering of leading people. Now, of course, the Athenians worshipped a whole pantheon of gods. There were altars and temples to Zeus, to Artemis, to Apollo, and endless other lesser deities dotted all around the city. But it seems that they also quite liked to hedge their bets, to make sure they didn't miss anyone out. And so Paul had also spotted an altar to an unknown god. And so that's where he starts. I can see, he says, that religion really matters to you. So let me tell you about this unknown god that you've been worshipping. And so he begins to talk about the God who created everything, who gives and sustains all life, a God who doesn't need human shrines, who can't be represented by some sort of gold or silver idol. And instead of using Bible verses, he turns to verses of Greek poetry, which would have been familiar to his listeners. In him we live and move and have our being. We too are his offspring. And it's only then, when he's made those connections, when he has their attention, that he goes on to talk about Jesus and the resurrection, that he goes on to challenge them, that he goes on to say that that unknown God has made himself known in Jesus of Nazareth. Now, of course, the church needs to find new ways of talking about God in every generation. In this diocese, all the churches are being asked to produce a mission action plan, setting out how they intend to grow over the next few years. It's something you'll be hearing more about in the coming months. And of course, there are many differences between first century Athens and 21st century London. I don't think we'd say that 21st century Londoners are very religious. Although there are a lot of people who would tell us that whilst they don't go to church, they are, quotes, in the market for spirituality. So how are we in our generation to share the good news of God's love? Are there things that we could learn from Paul's approach? Well, to start with what Paul doesn't do and say. He doesn't quote the Bible at them. He doesn't recite the history of Israel, because it would have been meaningless to them. And actually, that's much the same in 21st century London. Many people don't know the Bible at all, not even the well-known stories about Jesus. I have a friend who teaches English at university who says they have to lay on a special course on the Bible so that English literature students can understand Milton or T.S. Eliot. The other thing Paul doesn't do is tell them that they're a miserable bunch of sinners. He doesn't give them answers to questions that they're not asking. Instead, Paul begins by finding a point of contact. He takes the trouble to understand his listeners' context, to get a sense of the things that matter to them, to try to answer questions that they're actually asking. So those are the things he doesn't do. What does he do? Well, it seems to me that he speaks with confidence, but with genuine understanding, respect, and even humility. And it seems to me that those are things that should characterise our efforts to share the Christian message in our generation. With confidence, because we've experienced the love of God for ourselves. We know the difference that God makes in our lives. So actually there's no need to feel threatened by people who disagree with us. With understanding and respect, do we really listen to those who disagree with us? Do we really try to understand what's important to them and why they think the way they do? Do we let them tell us about their experience of spirituality rather than jumping in to tell them how to do things our way? At St Mary's, we've tried recently to improve our website to make it more attractive to people who don't come to church. We've now got Twitter feeds from the church and from Tiddlywinks. And that's not about jumping on some sort of social media bandwagon, but it's trying to communicate in the way that so many people do communicate now. And it's also about trying to understand better what makes people tick. If you look at Twitter, you see at a glance the things that matter to people at any given moment. Actually, recently I've been hearing a lot about the practice of mindfulness. If you've not heard about it, it's a way of being fully present in the moment, focused on how you feel now, not future plans or past mistakes. And a whole range of people claim that by practicing mindfulness, they found it's reduced stress, it's helped with depression, it's solved a whole range of problems. Well, actually, to my ears, that sounds very familiar, very like the Christian idea of the sacrament of the present moment, or Brother Lawrence's practicing the presence of God. That recognition that each moment is a gift of God, that now, this moment, is all we ever have. But perhaps as a church, and I'm talking about the church in general, not St. Mary's in particular, we've been so busy discussing women bishops or sexuality, and I'm not saying those things don't matter, but we've been so busy discussing those sort of things that we've forgotten to talk about spirituality. We've forgotten to talk about the great depths that we have in our faith that actually helps people in an area where they actually want to be helped. We've forgotten to answer the questions that people are actually asking. And finally, humility. Are we willing to realise that we might be wrong about some things? Not that God is wrong, but that our understanding has been too narrow. That maybe sometimes we've created God in our image rather than vice versa. Are we willing to think that we can learn from our culture, from the poets and prophets of our day? We don't need St. Paul to tell us that God can't be captured in an idol of silver and gold. But maybe as a church we've at times tried to keep him captive in a book, or in a set of religious propositions, or in the fact that we've always done things or always understood things in a particular way. We can get stuck with our images of God. We can make him a subject to be understood, rather than that vast sea in which we swim. And of course, when we do that, we close off all sorts of possible conversations. We end up talking just to ourselves about things which seem irrelevant and in language that only we understand. I could go on, but I won't. Instead, to return to that opening image, today may we all hear afresh that call to swim in the vast ocean, which is God's love. And as we move forward together as a church, may we find ways to draw others into that love in which we live and move and have our being. Amen.